Well, good evening, everyone. Well, this is the last talk I'm going to give during practice, during not practice period, before we have our sesshin. Because Michael's going to give this Sunday's talk, and Flo is going to give next Wednesday. This is my last one before sesshin. How did that happen? 6 weeks went by. Full of koans. I hope you have room for just a few more. For those who haven't been along for the ride, we've been, for our 8 week practice period, focusing on the koans, those ancient stories and dialogues that confound us, confuse us, and sometimes wake us up and turn our conventional ways of seeing things upside down, inside out, open us up. So, and these are all from the Book of Serenity collection. And I'm going to take one of the really most well-known ones this evening. Many of you will have heard of it already, often just as a passing reference. It's often referenced. You've heard the phrase, not knowing is most intimate. Yeah, often that's mentioned. But I'd like to share where it took me when I spent some time with this one this past week. It's case 20. And it's a dialogue between Zen Master Dizang and his student, Fayan, in 10th century Tang Dynasty China. So here's how it goes. Dizang asked Fayan, "Where are you going?" Fayan said, "Around on pilgrimage." Of course, that was a common practice in those days for monks to stay in one place for a while, practice with one teacher, and then go on pilgrimage through the mountains, rough trails, often with a friend, and stay at different monasteries and kind of test their understanding. So we don't really know how long, or whether this might be kind of early in their acquaintanceship, perhaps. Maybe they've just met at this point, because Dizang does say, where are you going? Around on pilgrimage. And Dizang asks, "What's the purpose of pilgrimage?" And Fayan said, "I don't know." There's that answer again. I don't know, you know? Remember the story we talked earlier, a few weeks back, about how when Bodhidharma met the Emperor Wu, and Emperor Wu said, "Who's that standing before me?" And Bodhidharma said, "I don't know." I don't know. And then here's Dizang's famous response, "Not knowing is most intimate." So of course they're talking about more than just Fayan's journey along the trails from monastery to monastery. They're talking about our pilgrimage through life. What's the purpose of it all? Many have struggled to answer that question from many various traditions, spiritual and secular. But Fayan doesn't try to give some lofty answer, does he? He just admits he really doesn't know. We could see this as an expression of beginner's mind, that favorite phrase so important to Suzuki Roshi, our Dharma great-grandfather. His adage, "In the beginner's mind are many possibilities, in the expert's there are few," has become famous. Right? Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, the name of the now classic book of his talks. And it makes sense. The beginner's mind, if it is receptive and curious, is wide open and observant. And the expert's mind may be constricted by its narrow focus. Did you ever run into an expert whose mind was not entirely open? You may have. You know, constricted by the assumption of already knowing it all, right? And we can all slip into that, can't we? You don't have to tell me that. Have you ever said that? Or felt it, even if you didn't say it? But what is this intimacy, as the word is often translated? The Chinese character means familial, closely related, and by extension, in person, firsthand, direct, directly connected, related. So it implies to me embodied relationship experienced directly. So I've been curious to see how Dogen references the koans in the Book of Serenity. He quotes this one in a short discourse, and he comments, "If I were Fayan, I would have asked Dizang, is not knowing most intimate or is knowing most intimate?" So he's not letting Dizang off the hook of duality, saying, wait a minute, isn't there a duality going on there? And I wonder if he was thinking of another classic koan, which is also one that many of you are familiar with, that is not in the Book of Serenity. It's in the Mumon Kan, or the Gateless Gate collection, and it goes, Zhao Zhou asked Nan Chuan, what is the way? Nan Chuan said, everyday mind is the way. Zhao Zhou said, how should I direct myself toward it? Nan Chuan replied, if you direct yourself toward it, you will be going in the wrong direction. Have you ever felt like the harder you strive for awakening, it slips, the further away it slips from you? You know, the harder you try in your practice, that somehow it backfires. So then Zhao Zhou says, well, if I don't direct myself toward it, how can I know it? And Nan Chuan said, the way has nothing to do with knowing or not knowing. Knowing is an exaggeration, right? Not knowing is stupidity. When you enter the way, you see it is as vast and boundless as space. What does this have to do with yes and no thinking? So he's going beyond even the duality of knowing or not knowing and not knowing. If you stick too much with knowing, you can't. You're inflexible. If you stick with not knowing, you can do something stupid because you're not. You're stuck. You're stuck. Don't get stuck. That's what he's saying. Not to be snagged by the dualities of it being attached to knowing or attached to not knowing, to the sacred or the mundane, right or wrong, good or bad, nirvana and samsara. This is the freedom of just sitting in zazen, right? Then getting up and going into the world and responding to who and whatever we meet in the wisest, most compassionate, skillful way possible. But then Dogen goes on to say, I completely leave the greatest intimacy to intimacy. But now I ask Dizang, what is this intimacy? Dogen doesn't let up. One koan leads to another. Okay, so now, what is intimacy? And this one led me to another one in the Book of Serenity. This is case 98. All it is a question and an answer between our old friend Dongshan, we've been hearing a lot from him, and an unnamed monk. The monk asked Dongshan, among the three Buddha bodies, which one does not fall into any category? And Dongshan answers, I am always intimate with this. What's this one about? The concept of the three Buddha bodies is notoriously hard to explain. I have seen very few really good explanations. And as soon as you do try, it just doesn't make sense that they are three different bodies. So it's a construct. three aspects of what we call Buddha or awakening. So I'm going to give a brief attempt just to satisfy your curiosity, since it appears the three bodies as a question in this koan. And because we chant these names in our Zen meal chant, so you will recognize these, those of you who have chanted our formal meal chant. So the first one is the Kaya in Sanskrit means body. So Dharmakaya, Dharma, body, is the body. It's the body of the essential Buddha, essential Buddha nature, we could say. And Sambhogakaya is often called the bliss or enjoyment body, the inner experience, the inner feeling of freedom or enlightenment. And Nirmanakaya is called the manifestation body, which is the physical embodied manifestation of Shakyamuni Buddha, or really of any of us. Now, if that's hard to sort out what's the difference between those three, don't feel bad. It sounds confusing and abstract. There will not be a quiz. And Dongshan did not want the monk to be concerned with getting this answer right either. He refused to answer the monk, didn't he? Instead, he brought him right down to the earth, saying, I am always intimate with this. That phrase is most often translated that way, using the word intimate, or sometimes as I am always close to this. Sometimes it's translated that way. But when you look at the Chinese, it's just five characters, and they go, I always to this. There's no close or intimate. It's left out. It's understood without even saying it. It just says, I always to this. And then the fifth character is the equivalent of an exclamation point. So, what is left out or meant to be understood? But if we know this is Dongshan speaking, and that the words from his own teacher that to which he awakened were, just this is it. If you remember that story, just this is it. Just this moment, this place, this world, as you meet it right here and now, is it. Awakening is not lifetimes away, out there, somewhere, unreachable. But this, just this, is a moment of awakening. And it's not a matter of knowing or not knowing. So here's where these two koans kind of come together. So I wanted to see what Dogen had to say about not knowing is most intimate. Or I am always intimate with this. Sometimes, see, he just throws these phrases in without any citations. I know where that came from. Dongshan said that. But I found this beautiful passage in a text of Dogen's called Miracles. It goes like this. Love a true dragon instead of loving a carved one. This is a reference to that old Chinese story of the scholar who was obsessed with dragons, and he collected paintings and images of dragons, and then one day when a real dragon appeared at his window, he fainted away in terror. So love a true dragon instead of loving a carved one. However, know that both carved and true dragons have the ability to produce clouds and rain. So we respond to both images and real. They're both real, or both not real, and we respond. Do not treasure or belittle what is far away, but be intimate with it. Do not treasure or belittle what is near, but be intimate with it. Do not make light or a big deal of what you see with your eyes. Do not make light or a big deal of what you hear with your ears. Rather, illuminate your eyes and ears. So that's his description of being intimate with all things. Elsewhere, Dogen tells that story of Bodhidharma and Emperor Wu, and then he comments, "Not knowing is a straightforward, bare heart. It is bright and clear, not seeing." Not seeing might sound counterintuitive, but not seeing means seeing with the, not just with the eyes, with more than the eyes. We'll come back to that maybe in a minute. And there's another Dogen text called Intimate Language. And in that he says, intimate means close and inseparable. There is no gap. Intimacy embraces Buddha ancestors. It embraces you. It embraces the self. It embraces action. It embraces generations. It embraces merit. It embraces intimacy. So again, that's Dogen talking about intimacy. Close and inseparable, no gap. So by one of those coincidences that happen sometimes that feel almost like a summoning, I came across a short essay by the great American writer Barry Lopez. Do people know Barry Lopez? Yeah. People often call Barry Lopez a nature writer, and I think that pigeonholes him a little bit too much. I mean, he's a beautiful nature writer, but it's much more. And he lived many years and very closely with indigenous people in northern Canada and wrote about that in his early books. This essay is called The Invitation, and I think it offers a perspective on Dogen's question, what is intimacy? So I'm going to read you some passages from this. I wish I could read you the whole thing, but we don't have time. When I was young and just beginning to travel with them, I imagined that indigenous people saw more and heard more, that they were overall simply more aware than I was. They were more aware and did see and hear more than I did. The absence of spoken conversation whenever I was traveling with them, however, should have provided me with a clue about why this might be true. But it didn't, not for a while. It's this: when an observer doesn't immediately turn what his senses convey to him into language, into the vocabulary and syntactical framework we all employ when trying to define our experiences, there's a much greater opportunity for minor details, which might at first seem unimportant, to remain alive in the foreground of an impression, where later they might deepen the meaning of an experience. So he's getting into that territory of Dogen's not seeing, not hearing. Then he gives an example. If my companions and I, for example, encountered a grizzly bear feeding on a caribou carcass, I would tend to focus almost exclusively on the bear. My companions would focus on the part of the world of which, at that moment, the bear was only a fragment. The bear here might be compared with a bonfire, a kind of incandescence that throws light on everything around it. My companions would glance off into the outer reaches of that light, then look back at the fire, back and forth. They would repeatedly situate the smaller thing within the larger thing, back and forth. As they noticed trace odors in the air, or listened for birdsong, or the sound of a brittle bush rattling, they in effect extended the moment of encounter with the bear backward and forward in time. Their framework for the phenomenon, one that I might later shorten just to meeting the bear, was more voluminous than mine, and where my temporal boundaries for the event would normally consist of little more than the moments of encounter with the bear, theirs included the time before we arrived as well as the time after we left. I'm skipping ahead. The event I was cataloging in my mind as encounter with a tundra grizzly, they were experiencing as a sudden immersion in the current of a river, They were swimming in it, feeling its pull, noting the temperature of the water, the back eddies, and where the side streams entered. So he's talking figuratively, that like river as the experience. Theirs was much more complete. My approach, in contrast, was mostly to take note of objects in the scene, the bear, the caribou, the tundra vegetation. A series of dots which I would try to make sense of by connecting them all with a single line. My friends had situated themselves within a dynamic event. Also, unlike me, they felt no immediate need to resolve it into meaning. Their approach was to let it continue to unfold, to notice everything and to let whatever significance was there emerge in its own time. The lesson to be learned here was not just for me to pay closer attention to what was going on around me, if I hoped to have a deeper understanding of the event, but to remain in a state of suspended mental analysis while observing all that was happening, resisting the urge to define or summarize, to step away from the familiar compulsion to understand. Not knowing is most intimate. He just described it. Perhaps the first rule of everything we endeavor to do is to pay attention. Perhaps the second is to be patient. And perhaps a third is to be attentive to what the body knows. The very beginning of this book is a quote from the French philosopher Simone Weil, who said, "Attention is the rarest and purest form of generosity. Absolutely unmixed attention is prayer." I just love finding Dharma in sources that aren't labeled Dharma. Mm-hmm. So I thank Barry Lopez, who was his own kind of bodhisattva, and who died in 2020 after a very rich life. So as you, I hope, get some sense, Lopez is describing a way of knowing, not knowing, seeing, not seeing, hearing, not seeing, that so resonates with Dogen's view of what Dogen calls Genjo Koan, the fundamental koan of our lives, self and world, right? Self and world. And the way Dogen tells us to carry yourself forward and experience the 10,000 things is delusion, the way we usually propel ourselves headfirst into the world, that the 10,000 things come forth and experience themselves is awakening. So it's, you know, when we fully meet the 10,000 things coming forth, that's awakening. This is, maybe we could say, intimacy beyond knowing or not knowing. A fully reciprocal awakening to the world. A dynamic unfolding of just this. It doesn't have to be anything as dramatic as meeting a grizzly bear on the tundra, but an ordinary encounter on the streets of Vancouver with a stranger or a family member, with a flower or a raccoon, an ancient red cedar, or your neighbor's toddler. Just this moment, just this meeting. It's another wonderful Japanese saying, Ichigo Ichie, one moment, one meeting. Comes from tea ceremony, one moment, one meeting. So that's all I will say this evening. Thank you for listening. And I want to invite you in your talking circles to, if you wish, to describe a moment of direct experience, of intimacy beyond the conventional way we think of knowing. When can you think of an example of when not knowing was most intimate or is most intimate in your life? Or you also might just want to talk about how might you pay attention in a different way, in something closer to what Barry Lopez describes, rather than that narrow focus concentration. How might you pay attention, and where might you, when might you practice that? Okay, so you can describe a moment of not knowing as most intimate. And how might you practice a different kind of paying attention closer to what Barry Lopez describes? Or anything else you'd like to bring up from this koan. Okay, so thank you, and we will say goodnight to the folks over there at Brightstream Temple, because they'll form their own circle. And how many Zoom folks? Looks like the Zoom folks can be